Clary was a man that I visited frequently. I used to make sure that I visited him at a time of the day when I thought he might be out of bed. Late morning, early afternoon, that kind of thing. And often when I expected him not to be in bed, he was in bed. Still crippled with pain from arthritis, drugged, almost helpless in the face of that pain. Pain has a way of capturing and holding our attention. It restricts what we can do. Either consciously or unconsciously, we want to consult with the pain in our bodies before we do anything. It can affect the way we think of ourselves and the way we think of others. Pain has the capacity to define who we are. It's wearying. I remember listening to Jeffrey Bingham, a giant of the Christian faith here in Adelaide in the 70s and 80s and 90s. Remembered hearing his story of being wounded during World War II and being taken prisoner by the Japanese. 50 years on from that trauma in his body, he still felt the pain each and every day from his war injury. He said that sometimes, for no particular reason at all, he was free of that pain. And he described the feeling of bliss, absolute release, when that pain was gone. I know that in this room, we are familiar with bodily pain, that caused by injury, the attack of viruses, the attack of infections, trauma, the plain old decay that comes with getting older. But I know also that we're familiar with the emotional pain, a spiritual pain, the pain of who we are because another has violated our personhood. That pain that is associated with the loss of communion. The ancient Hebrew people were a people who knew the pain of dislocation and disconnection from their God. Over a number of centuries, yes, centuries, their national life had gone into decline. They were a people whose holy and sacred worship sites had been desecrated and defiled. They were a people whose national life was such that there was no justice when it should have been there. There was no looking after the widows and the fatherless and those who were poor. There was worship of idols. There was, in fact, religious practices that meant that they felt, if they felt it necessary, to sacrifice their children in order to appease some god. Totally disconnected from God and the requirements of the covenant that he had placed upon them and that they had agreed to and wanted to be part of. The simple fact was that God's people were designed to be part of God and God wanted to be part of their life. Quite naturally and properly, I guess, not unexpectedly, they found themselves at war with a superpower. They were defeated. Their national life was destroyed. Many, many, many thousands of people were taken away from their homeland to live in exile in a foreign land. I guess if you'd been in that situation, you might think that God had forsaken you that God was nowhere to be found, that God and relationship with God was unattainable. But they found otherwise. We turn to Isaiah 55 and read these words at the very beginning of the chapter. Come, all of you who are thirsty, and you who have no money, come, buy and eat without money and without cost. Listen to me and eat what is good, and you will delight in the richest of fare. Give ear and come to me. Listen that you may live. I will make an everlasting covenant with you, my faithful love, promised to David. That word covenant we see there is another word for communion. It represents that life of living with God. The covenant was all about how it was that a sinful people might live and represent and honour God in their life. It was all about God being part of the way they lived in life. It was about communion. I guess we're not quite there yet, Roger. Thanks. What I wanted to say was that communion is actually at the heart of all things. I guess you've heard that saying, money makes the world go round. I want to say to you this morning that it's not money or success or power or influence or sporting prowess or being a superstar on the screen that makes the world go round. Rather, communion is a thing that is at the heart of the world, that makes the world, empowers the world, drives it. Now we'll move on to the next part of the reading today. Seek the Lord while he may be found. Call on him while he is near. Let the wicked forsake their ways and the unrighteous their thoughts. Let them turn to the Lord and he will have mercy on them, and to our God, for he will freely pardon. Not only is communion at the heart of all things, but we know that communion in this crazy world of ours is dependent upon repentance and forgiveness. So we find that repentance and forgiveness are those things which actually power this world, our society, our lives, our community. Repentance and forgiveness is at the heart of all things. It's God's default. It's his default stance. It's part of who God is. But it's not really our default stance, is it? There are many roadblocks that we might either put in front of ourselves or find we are confronted with as we seek to forgive and be forgiven, bearing in mind that forgiveness and repentance are the essentials that make this world what it is. Pride plays a big part, doesn't it? We want to be judge and jury. If we have been injured and damaged in any way, we want to make sure that that other person is punished in some way. And we know inherently that when forgiveness comes, that person is released, and so are we. That feeling of not wanting to be wrong, that feeling that we must justify what we've done, is another thing that actually helps us or prevents us from forgiving and being forgiven. Sometimes those feelings that I'm just too far beyond forgiveness to even ask for it because of what I've done stops us asking for forgiveness. Or maybe what has been done to you is just so far beyond what is normal and decent that we can't find ourselves in our hearts that certainty that forgiveness needs to happen. And then there are those that just keep repeating the offence. We've forgiven them before, but lo and behold, it happens again and again and again. Why would you bother to try and forgive someone when it just keeps happening? We think maybe we need to convince God of our worthiness. You know, there's got to be some kind of special pleading that we need to engage in to get God to forgive us where we have transgressed the holiness of God in our actions and in our words. Sometimes that sense of guilt and shame that comes because we know that we've hurt someone, because we know that we have hurt God in what we have done, it just won't let us get into that space of asking for forgiveness or giving forgiveness. At the heart of the creation is communion, is repentance and forgiveness. These are the things that drive this world forward in God's good plan and purpose. I reckon this next story covers all of us in some way, especially those of you who have been married or in a close personal relationship. You might be surprised at this, but Lorraine and I had the odd time of difficulty, have had, in our married life. I want you to know that mostly, about 99.9% of the time, the perpetrator of the violence towards the other was this man standing in front of you. So don't think badly of Lorraine. You can think badly of me. But it amazed me how often a quick word spoken with the wrong tone of voice, or that was critical, or that sought to somehow or other correct, how quickly that turned into a separation, a division, how quickly that pain developed. I was thinking this morning of the imagery of a millipede. You know what millipedes are, don't you? They overwhelm our house at times in certain seasons, and our backyard. You can sit on our back outside our living room and watch these little fellas scurrying across the concrete. When you look at them closely, their little legs moving so fast, it looks like a caterpillar track just moving like this. But anyway, if you touch one of those little millipedes on the back, their movement stops instantly. They curl up into a little circle as a way of protecting themselves. And I've been amazed over the years in my life with Lorraine how often words that hurt and shame and call into question her identity and her value, how often the response has been like that millipede that just stops in its tracks and curls in a little circle in an effort to protect. Most of these times were suddenly a no-talk zone. We studiously avoided physical contact. The middle of the bed was a bit larger than normal. There was no warm cuddle and kiss goodnight. There was a steely, cold silence that enveloped the house and sat between us. Now, surely I'm not the only one in this room who's experienced these things. It speaks of the pain of broken relationship, broken communion. And that pain that existed between us made us wary of one another, it impacted the way we saw ourselves and each other. It impacted the things that we chose to do and chose not to do. Eventually, after maybe a couple of days of this separation, the knowledge that communion was actually what we were there for and was so great, so powerful that someone had to do something to break open the pain that was occurring. And usually, yes, it was me, but because I was the one who was the perpetrator of this terrible thing, these words that had been spoken between us. In desperation to recover what had been lost, those words, "I'm sorry," were blurted out. "I'm sorry I've treated you this way. I don't want to be in this place where you are in pain. Because in your pain," I didn't say these words, but I'm just saying these are the things that go on in your heart and mind. The "I'm sorry" was all that was needed. And then forgiveness was enacted. Now, I don't think I need to go into too much detail about enacting forgiveness between two young lovers. Do I need to say? No, I don't really need to say much about that. Because I will say this, though, that the difference between that separation and violation and the forgiveness and confession was bliss. The communion that was restored was more beautiful than the communion we had before this event. Suddenly, all the possibilities of being together, of living together, were opened up once again. Suddenly, life looked a lot different, and we felt a lot different about ourselves. All through that, "I'm sorry. We shouldn't be in this place." God has enacted His of us, of all those who transgress His holy ways, of all those who separate themselves from God's love. God's love has been acted for all of those who seek to deny God's existence, who seek to deny His importance in their lives, who will have nothing of His claim, of His promise of life, who will have nothing of the joy that God has in sharing his life with us. So, God's forgiveness is not a matter of special pleading. It is a matter of saying sorry. It is a matter of determining to go in another direction. It is a matter of entering into that enactment that has already taken place. And by which I mean quite clearly the death and resurrection of Jesus for our sakes. The way in which we have been welcomed into God's family. We spoke earlier, someone spoke earlier of the prodigal son, the father who welcomed his son after a time of separation, a time of corruptness, a time of letting go all of his inheritance. God welcomes us. And he does so because Jesus came and bore the burden of all of our wrongness and has therefore given us and opened up for us a different kind of life with him. I just want to invite the musicians to come and take their places as I just say a few further things. It may be that there are many amongst us today, or some, or a few, or one or two, that are suffering pain because of some violation that has occurred by another person in your life. When we've sung this song, I want to make an invitation to you and any others for any other reason to come forward for prayer as a way of responding to this word that we've been engaged in this morning. Because truly, life that continues to be lived in unforgiveness is a life that is a life of pain, a life that can be healed and blessed and made new through forgiveness. Both for those who may have perpetrated pain in other people's lives, but for those who have suffered in that way. So as we sing, let's just remember God's goodness, God's love, God's willingness to hold us, to receive us. And may it be that God gives us the capacity to heal and to bless through forgiveness.